I'm Deborah J. M. Smith. This is InformingChristians.com, Current Events and Then Some, Monday, February 23, 2009. Recently, I had the opportunity to speak with Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth about Homosexuality. AFTA, A-F-T-A-H, an organization devoted to spreading the truth about homosexuality, is a leader in this cultural war. Having never seen another site so devoted to fighting this issue, that is where I began the conversation. Peter, I have yet to come across another site that is so devoted. What are the advantages of being so focused on this one cause?
Well, Deborah, it's fascinating. I think one of the reasons we were losing in this culture war, and I'm talking about the side of truth, which would be people who believe, anybody who believes homosexuality is wrong, whether they're religious or not, I think the reason we're losing is because the other side has been focused like a laser beam while we're all over the place. And, you know, I mean, take a good person like yourself. I'm just getting now familiar with all your good work, but I'm sure you're concerned about high taxes and you're, I hope you're pro-life. If you're not, let's have another discussion.
Absolutely,
and,
I am.
And you're also concerned about homosexuality because you're a good person. And the problem is that, you know, you can't devote a lot of your time to fighting the homosexual agenda. And for these guys, it's almost like a religion. It's 24/7.
And they put all their resources into it as well. And most of them, of course, they don't have children. Therefore, their expenses are low otherwise. And so they have a lot of money they can put behind it, too. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and, you know, it's not just money. It's also time. You know, that's another factor we have is a lot of the pro-family people are, they have families, they have church, they have all sorts of activities. If you're a homosexual activist, say like Wayne Beeson, who's a fanatical homosexual activist who tries to go around and discredit the idea of change for homosexuals, that they can leave the lifestyle. I mean, you can go anywhere. You can fly to Brazil tomorrow if you have to, right? And so there's an advantage with time and, of course, money. They spend a lot more money promoting the acceptance of homosexuality and now transsexuality than our movement does, specifically fighting the gay agenda.
So they're one issue oriented themselves, bottom line.
Bottom line, yes.
Who they are, that's what they are, that's what they do.
Right, and now the transsexuals have picked up on, all they did was they copied the technique of the homosexual activists, and so the transsexual activists are also singularly focused on promoting what I call gender confusion and what they call the transgender, various transgender identity lifestyles.
Now, those behind the homosexual agenda, and I say those behind because a lot of them are hetero who are behind it, oddly enough.
Yeah, could I say something on that, Deborah?
Yes.
Heterosexual liberals on this issue, people who are promoting, the gay rights agenda, are fast becoming the most radical pro-homosexual activists in the nation. Because think about it, if they're under the delusion that they're promoting a real civil rights movement, that this is the extension of the civil rights movement from the 60s and 70s, but that's not the case, of course. Homosexuality has nothing to do with civil rights. Homosexuality is about bad behavior that's, thank God, it's changeable, and it's not the basis for identity, and it really has nothing to do with race either. But you take your straight, liberal, pro-gay, you know, activist, and if you challenge them, well, then you're basically challenging their way of being good. And if we're right and they're wrong, then actually they're not doing a good thing. So, of course, groups like Americans for Truth and Liberty Council, et cetera, are a threat to these straight, pro-gay liberals because we are saying, no, this is not a good thing you're doing. Far from advancing civil rights, you're promoting a human wrong, homosexuality.
And it's an absolute insult to the entire black race for them to even begin to try and compare it to the civil rights movement.
Absolutely, but that never stops them. You know, they're always doing it. They continue to do so. They continue to use the bogus comparison between so-called homosexual marriage and interracial marriage. You know, I have a friend who is in an interracial marriage. He was a buddy of mine from college at University of Michigan, and I mean, the idea that his marriage, which has produced children, is anything at all like a marriage so-called based on deviant sexual behavior is ludicrous.
And of course, even for heterosexuals who are unable to have children, they are able to consummate a marriage, which obviously two homosexuals cannot do.
Yes, I mean, there is no act of consummation in a homosexual relationship, and in fact, you know, it's just bizarre. You get these situations, for example, in lesbian relationships where they're obviously mimicking what true sexuality is, you know, and we're a family show, so we can't describe that, but it involves, you know, various implements sometimes, and it's just, you know, the whole thing is really they're trying to copy normalcy, and it always falls short, of course, but even when you see, you know, say a homosexual male relationship where one guy is the you know, the breadwinner, another guy stays home and is kind of like acting like the housewife, you know, it's this weird sort of copycat copying of normalcy, I should say, a real relationship, a marriage between a man and a woman.
It is. It's a pretend, and I do know what you're speaking of, and I believe Romans chapter 1 refers to them as inventors of evil things or wicked things, and that's what they do to be able to make it like that with the women. And then, of course, the men use a different part of their body to pretend, which is, we know what Dr. Diggs says about all this.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is, the catch-22 about fighting the movement is, they know, I mean, look at us here, we're sitting here trying to describe what homosexuals do in this failed attempt to mimic marriage and real normal relationships. And we can't, and actually people don't even want to hear it because it grosses the average person out. And so one of the catch-22s that I've faced over the years is you want to educate people on the behavior. You say, we don't hate people, we oppose behavior, and the behavior is changeable. We don't hate anybody, but we do oppose the behavior. But then when you try to educate them on the behavior, and in this case we're talking sexual behavior is obviously what defines the movement, but when we try to explain the sexual behavior, it almost makes us look weird, and the average person doesn't want to hear about it. So they actually use that to their advantage because they know that people don't want to hear about sodomy. They don't want to think, oh, they don't even want to know about sodomy. They certainly don't want to even see a couple men on screen kiss, which is why, you know, we're not seeing the movie Milk, you know, go through the charts with the success, because there's homosexuality, there's male homosexuality. Homosexual acts are going on in that movie, and you know, the average Joe doesn't really want to see that. but it's difficult to try to explain the movement because it's even harder than abortion to explain, I guess is what I'm saying.
And then on top of everything else, there's the situation in the public schools.
I think the most cynical thing in the entire homosexual movement is this idea, symbolized by the David Parker case in Massachusetts, which I'm sure you're aware of, right?
Yes.
This thing of that we're going to teach very young children who don't even know what sex is yet. They don't even have a clue what sex is yet. We're going to teach them the concept of homosexuality, of homosexual love. And to hear Parker explain it, because he spoke at our conference a couple years ago at AFTA, it was brilliant what he said, which was, they want to have young children associate homosexuality with love.
Yeah.
They want to have these young kids who don't even know what sex is yet associate this with normal love. And that's before the parents can impart their own values into the child. That is why the homosexual activists are fighting tooth and nail for the right to indoctrinate young kids in this false concept of homosexuality at tender, young, impressionable ages.
And that's why they don't want adults to know what it is exactly that they're doing. That's why they're trying to make people who come out and say what it is that they're doing sound shameful. So we're shameful for saying what they're doing, but they're not shameful for doing it.
Yeah, and that brings you to the concept of homophobia, which has grown in its scope of what it allegedly means. It used to mean, you know, a fear of homosexuality, and I certainly don't fear homosexuals. I doubt you do, Deborah. But now it's grown homophobia. When you look at the dictionaries, it's a fascinating progression. The term homophobia now is criticism of homosexuality. It's more intended now to mean what they would consider unreasonable criticism of, or opposition to homosexuality. And so we're all homophobes now. Anybody, in fact, I think it's coming to the point where if you disagree with the legalization of so-called same-sex marriage, at some level, you are a homophobe.
Right. See, I would say I'm more of a homo concerned. I'm concerned about what it's doing to this country on a whole, and of course to the children. Now, the movement itself is very notorious for lashing out.
Yes.
What's been your experience there?
Yes, I mean this is one of the most intolerant movements that's ever been produced in the United States. I mean, and it goes way, way back. I was just on a radio show, and I mentioned the gay activist called and said, well, you guys are the – he was talking about me and Matt Barber, who's over at Liberty Council. He said, you two guys are the Anita Bryants of our age. And it made me remember I had just done a little experiment, and I would encourage you and your listeners to do this, Deborah. Go to YouTube.com and plug in Anita Bryant and pie in the face in the search engine. And you come upon the famous episode where she got the pie in her face, and I had never seen it before a couple weeks ago. I had never seen this. And it's fascinating. She's giving a press conference, and a homosexual activist, you know, angrily comes up and throws the pie in her face during the press conference. And, you know, you can – she's humiliated. She's crying. The cameras are running. It's just terrible.
Wow.
And you can sit back and the homosexual activist. Oh, they justify that act of that vicious act actually, and they laugh at it, but it's still vicious, and they justify it because they oppose what Anita Bryant did politically, what she said. They accuse her of attacking the homosexual community, blah blah blah, but the act itself is not the way America usually works. You know, if I were to go up and throw a pie in the face of Joe Solomonese at Human Rights Campaign when he was on, giving a major TV interview or something, you know, I'd probably be arrested and thrown in jail. But that's the beginning of it. You know, you have now with the Prop 8, the Proposition 8, the idea that the homosexual activists are trying to discredit the vote of the people, overturn the vote of the people in court. There was all sorts of extremist tactics and rhetoric after Prop 8 passed in California. There's always been a fringe, a part of the homosexual movement. At one time, there was a group called ACT UP, which is very active, and it specialized in these kind of mini terror techniques. And it's just they are trying to intimidate people into silence. That's the bottom line.
Well, I remember about 2.5 years ago seeing online there was a meeting at a church for ex-homosexuals, and the homosexual who were still homosexuals were outside of the church yelling over loudspeakers and causing a huge disruption, to the point where the police came and actually didn't let the people inside the church come out, and yet they didn't do a thing to the homosexuals who were causing all the disruption outside.
Was that in Wisconsin?
You know, I can't remember.
Yeah, there was one in Wisconsin, and I can't remember the name of the guy. There was a African American preacher involved, and his name escapes me. But you're right, and there was a similar incident in California, in San Francisco. Another incident in which homosexuals were pretty much storming the church doors. That was the Hamilton Square Baptist Church in San Francisco. The battle between religious rights and gay rights is a zero-sum game. In other words, when one gains, the other loses.
Basically, they have taken that which many find to be a sin, and they're saying our government is basically deeming it not a sin and telling us that we cannot, well, they're trying to get us to the point where we cannot speak against it without getting in legal trouble.
Yes, yes, exactly, and it's moving forward. You know, now I'm, the part about not being the sin, they would say, well, the government's not saying that. You can have your belief, but more and more, the belief would be circumscribed to be basically in your church or maybe in your home. And then, do you think they're really not going to sue the churches? Let's say the churches that decide that they're not going to perform a homosexual so-called wedding. Do you think those churches are going to be left alone in this country? If you believe that, I've got the Brooklyn Bridge. I heard it's for sale, and I'll let you have it for $5, Deborah. I mean, this is a movement that has grown based on aggressive legal action. And right now they're talking about respect for religion, but there will come a time when they will sue that church, because if they really believe, as they do, that opposition to homosexuality is equivalent to being a racist, in other words, antisocial, vile conduct, racism. Most of us in America are now opposed racism. We just elected a black president. They're making that analogy, and they're going to try to make it stick, and they will use the liberal courts to do it, which is why I tell Christians, disabuse yourself of the idea that homosexual activists, number one, respect your religion. They certainly don't as it pertains to homosexual behavior. And number two, that they respect your right, Deborah, as a Christian, to exercise your religion and your moral beliefs in the public square.
And we see what they've done up in Canada.
Yes, in Canada. In Canada, you have pastors, you know, the chilling effect of lawsuits and sexual orientation procedures, because they have these tribunals, these human rights tribunals, at which homosexual activists can file complaints they feel discriminated against based on sexual orientation. You have pastors, religious Christians being sued through those tribunals. You also have pastors self-censoring. There's a chilling effect from these sexual orientation codes. So absolutely, you see, and in Britain as well, and other countries, you see the chilling effect of these sexual orientation codes being applied much more aggressively than they are in many parts of the United States.
Now, here in the States, because they haven't gotten the laws to go as far as they've gone in Canada, they tend to do other things like economic sabotage. They'll try and go after people's jobs. They'll try and ruin people. Now, you are fighting this fight so diligently. Do you believe you come up against even more opposition? Are you targeted at all?
Well, I mean, you know, we're opposed by the homosexual activists, and you know, I can't tell you how much gay hate mail I get, which kind of sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? Gay hate mail.
I know.
They stole the meaning of the word gay. It used to mean kind of very happy, and now I think gay is being associated with some very negative characteristics, and I get some awful, awful hate mail, and certainly we've had instances where there's awful threats, and I actually had a guy write me the other day because we succeeded in exposing this awful perversion event and at a hotel in Washington, D.C., and it was canceled. And then we started getting this awful hate mail, and one guy wrote in and said, why don't you kill yourself? And I opened up the email, and it said, I hear the best way to do it is by putting a gun at the base of your chin and pointing it upward to the rear part of your brain, you know? I mean, you get this bizarre email that I cannot imagine anybody I know in the pro-family movement even thinking about sending out something so vile and hate-filled. And yet I get these kind of things, maybe not that bad, but we get a lot of that.
Wow. And yet they're the ones going after hate crime laws and hate speech laws that actually threaten our freedom of speech.
Yeah, I really think it's accurate to say that the homosexual movement is one of the most hateful movements that's ever been, you know, grown on American soil. And you just see that. You see the we got this guy. I was on the radio show of Liberty Council. They have a radio show over the AFA network. And a guy called in. He said his name was Joe. Well, I didn't make the connection. It was from a Joe of a blog called Joe My God. His name is Joe Jervis. Now, this guy, you know, he was mad that we kind of talked over him. He got out his point. He said that we were, on his blog, he says, me and Matt Barber and I are two of the most evil people on this issue and blah, blah, blah. But anyways, I didn't make the connection. It was this guy. This Joe My God blog is so wicked and twisted. He did a whole blog post about how I'm really a homosexual, and just admit it, Pete, you really want man sex, as he put it in the title of the article, man sex. I mean, can you imagine something so vile, Deborah?
Well, it's interesting how they find what they do to be that which would insult you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an observation I've made. So funny to hear you say that, because I always wonder, yeah, it's like the biggest insult they can throw at me is, guess what? I'm a homosexual. You know, and it's just so preposterous. It's like every pro-lifer, you know, the strongest pro-lifers, do they secretly yearn to have abortions? But, I mean, that's just one example. The movement is very hateful because ultimately they hate God's law on this. And so at some level, they hate, you know, in the Bible, if you're a Christian, you know, you love God's law. You rarely actually live up to it, of course, and we're striving and we need the help and we're always repenting. I'm sure you are, just like I am, Deborah, and we mm-hmm. fall short. But we don't hate God's law. We don't say, oh, gosh. And I think, you know, I have a trouble with the idea of that envy is a sin, or that adultery is a sin. And what this movement is doing is it's trying to recraft homosexual behavior as not sinful. Well, God, you know, has revealed clearly throughout the Word. Romans 1 is so clear. In the Old Testament, it was an act, listed among the terrible sexual sins that, the capital crime almost. It is listed as a capital crime in the Old Testament, and yet they're trying to turn it and say it's not a bad thing. And so that puts them really at war with God. And that's why I think this movement is so anti-Christian. That's why they are so anti-religious, because they have to justify something which cannot be justified. And they have so much invested personally in God being wrong, as it were. And, you know, I don't know about you, Deborah, but I've never met any Christian who would ever, ever even insinuate that God is wrong. But that's the whole bread and butter of this movement, that God is wrong about homosexuality. You can't believe the Bible, and all those people who believe homosexuality is wrong, they're just a bunch of homophobic bigots who've been trained on this myth, and you know, they're all wrong. That's the gambit of the gay movement.
We don't begrudge them. If they're a religion, if they worship a god, I don't know, a tree in their backyard that tells them it's okay to do these disgusting things to each other, if that's what they really want, I'm not going to try and stop them. What bothers us is that they're trying to stop us from worshiping the true God and fully worshiping the true God, which entails, we are told, to have nothing to do with evil works of darkness, but rather to expose them, and there is to be no law made by Congress that would hinder us from the practice thereof. And that is a huge part of the practice of our faith belief, is to expose evil works of darkness.
Yes, and so now, Deborah, just to bring it all home, let's say you're a business owner and New York passes a civil unions law or so-called gay marriage law. You're in New York. You have more than the exempted number for business, because usually there's a small business exemption of some sort. Let's say you have 20 employees. Under the law, even though you believe homosexual practice is wrong, you don't hate people, but you don't want to reward behavior that you don't believe in, you could have a daycare center, for example, and an open, defiant lesbian could come in and apply at your daycare center. In the most wicked case, it would be somebody who's targeting you specifically because they say, gosh, Deborah Smith is really a bad person. I'm going to get her. So they're going to target your business. In a little bit less wicked case, it's just a lesbian, and she loves to work with children. And so she applies at your company. Well, you know, having to treat her as if this is a civil rights issue, you would be forced out your faith position on homosexuality, and that's wrong. I mean, you believe that homosexuality is part. If somebody embraces homosexuality, that's bad character, and so you are being forbidden from making a judgment about a person's character because of the sexual orientation law that is on the books.
Yes, and in actuality, we would be being forbidden to practice our faith belief of
right.
having nothing to do with evil works of darkness. And that's, if that's our business that we've paid for, we've built, we should not have to employ someone who our God, the true and living God, tells us to have nothing to do with.
Well, I mean, look, if you, it's about character. It's about your judgment, and you are not are no longer free in that circumstance. That's the key issue. They would say, "Oh, well, Deborah, you can still worship at your church." We're not saying you can't believe homosexuality is a sin. We're talking about employment rights here. It's employment discrimination. But we've already seen the way they're applying it, and they don't even have the federal law. We had the Mexican, the New Mexican photographer. They went to a wedding photographer in New Mexico. And this is, I believe it was a lesbian couple, and my memory is not serving me here, Deborah. I think it was a lesbian couple. They wanted their so-called union ceremony photographed by a Christian photographer. The Christian said, no, I don't want to do this. I'm not sure. She probably recommended somebody else, another photographer, to shoot that wedding. But they sued because they said, hey, how dare you refuse our business? Well, the Christian did not want to be part of a homosexual ceremony. That's her right as a Christian. And so they're already demonstrating that they're going to completely trample over our right to express our sincere religious or moral beliefs. And I got to give the caveat, Deborah, I also uphold the right of an atheist to be morally opposed to homosexuality. And an atheist has every right that I have to oppose homosexuality. It's not just a religious thing. It's our moral belief system here. And they've already demonstrated that they're going to trample over it by what they're doing in places like New Mexico. So what are they going to be like when they have federal and state law, the full power of federal and state government to enforce this rigid pro-homosexual orthodoxy over the entire country?
They're definitely seeking to take our rights away. They're trying to say that if you have a business and you don't do business with them, so it's a case of their wanting to bring back forced servitude, because that's what that is.
It's a case of their saying, and Kai Feldblum, the one I mentioned earlier, is the most clear on this. Yeah, you have your rights, but we have our rights too, and guess what? Our rights are superior to yours. So it's really a case of superior rights for homosexuals, because they're saying that their right to act homosexually supersedes our right of association and freedom of speech, etc.
Yes, that's what they're saying. It supersedes anything else. They're not for equal rights. They are for superior rights. And another thing, in the Declaration of Independence, our founding fathers declared that we have certain unalienable rights given to us by our Creator. And the homosexuals are trying to stomp on a number of those rights. So is anything in the Bible that God tells us to do, like come out and be separate, you know, put the wicked out from among you. I mean, there's a number of scriptures. They're basically telling us that we don't have that right, and they want the government to tell us that we don't have that right, even though our founding fathers went to war to protect that right after they declared that right.
Right, and that's why we will see these cases adjudicated. It'll go all the way up to the Supreme Court. We've won some and we've lost some. You've already, you know, about the Boy Scouts. They, by a slim 5-4 vote, their right not to hire open homosexuals for a scoutmaster position was defended by the Supreme Court, but only by a 5-4 vote. Had Barack Obama appointed a couple of those other justices, the Boy Scouts might have lost that right. And yet we've lost other important cases. We lost Amendment 2 in Colorado, where the people of that state decided they did not want homosexuality to become a civil right. That's what they voted, and it passed. And the Supreme Court threw that out. And so, you know, that was a huge loss for us, as was the sodomy case, Lawrence v. Texas, in which homosexual anti-sodomy law in Texas was basically cast aside, and essentially is you know, creating these artificial constitutional rights out of nothing. And so our liberties are threatened, and I don't know where this is going, but you know, it's really scary in terms of civil liberties of people to express their heartfelt religious beliefs.
Yeah, it's certainly left their bedrooms, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, it's way beyond the bedrooms, that's for sure. It's in the schools. I mean, there was a time when homosexual activists said, "Oh, we just want tolerance. We want to be left alone. We're not interested in the schools." And now to see that they're actually fighting for, in the Parker case, even for parents just to be informed of these pro-homosexual, I call them indoctrination sessions because that's what they are. When you're teaching a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old or a second grader about homosexuality in a positive context with no corresponding countervailing lesson about the morality about homosexuality being morally wrong, that's indoctrination.
Then we also have the after-school programs.
The gay-straight alliances.
Yes.
Yes, yes, you have. This has been a huge development. A lot of the schools now have these so-called gay clubs, and usually they're GSAs, gay-straight alliances. And they say that they're just doing this to protect the kids or to encourage tolerance. But again, it's promoting a one-sided view of homosexuality. These GSAs often are given the same rights as other clubs in the schools, which means they get to publicize their activity throughout the school, and so they engage in propaganda or activist exercises in that school during school hours because they're allegedly just like any other club. And you know, the amazing thing is, if you think about parents, usually parents, they want their children to be in after-school activities, most of them. Every other activity, you know, if it's the chess club, the debate club, sports, you know, these are good things. But then you bring the homosexual club in, and all of a sudden you've got kids, the phenomenon of kids being in these homosexual clubs without their parents' knowledge. And I just think that is so tragic, you know, that this is going on. And I think the idea of teenagers embracing homosexuality is a very sad thing. You know, we want people to realize that you don't have to be gay. There are many, many people who've left homosexuality, many of them through Jesus Christ. I mean, they become Christians. They get serious about their faith. They understand that there were, you know, they overcome the problems, some of the fears, attitudinal changes take place, and they leave homosexuality behind. And I'm afraid that a lot of these young people now are being taught or acculturated to the idea that this is just a basic identity. This is who they are. And they're getting a lot of propaganda from the gay side, not much truth from our side. And I'm afraid there's a lot more pro-homosexual, bisexual, and transgender experimentation taking place these days than even 10 years ago.
I think there's a lot taking place in the public schools.
It's about behavior. That's it, Deborah. We would say the same thing if it's about, you know, I'm against sex outside marriage. I'm against promiscuity, heterosexual promiscuity. This is just one of several sexual sins.
We've never seen public schools teaching children that it's okay that Bobby has two mommies and two daddies because they got divorced. We don't see that. We don't see it's okay that Sally's mommy is having an affair with Bobby's daddy. We don't see that. We don't see them marching in the streets loud and proud that they're adulterers.
Yeah.
We don't see this.
Right. That's the big difference. You've just answered the bogus accusation. Oh, why are you so, and this even comes from a lot of Christians. Why are you so obsessed? Why are you so focused on one issue? Look, you look at all the organizations on the other side. You know, the Lambda Legal Defense Fund. You've got, you know, the GLSEN, the Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network, Human Rights Campaign, National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. This huge number of pro-homosexual groups, and you've got a tiny number of conservative groups like mine who are trying to answer that juggernaut. And so, if anything, we are vastly outspent in terms of people, resources, money, time. The other side has a huge advantage in that area, and we're just trying to do the best we can to answering their many lies.
Now, here's another area I did find out. Social Security, the Office of Social Security, they don't recognize any of this. If a person decides to claim that they're the opposite sex, and which we see happening in the schools. Now, the latest thing is you probably heard about it from up at massresistance.org. Brian Kammacher reported
yep.
on it, a janitor who has decided to start dressing as a woman. And then there was the case here in Batavia, New York, where a science teacher in high school decided to start dressing as a woman. That's what prompted me a couple years back to call the Office of Social Security and ask them. And I think the person thought I was a cross-dresser. She got all defensive, and she said, I'm sorry, but we don't recognize that. You know, we're the Office of Social Security, and we don't recognize that
yeah.
here. So their paychecks have to still go to their regular name. They can't go to their fake name.
Well, but it's all part of the thing that they're trying to change. Here in Illinois, the ACLU is suing to allow a transsexual to change his birth certificate. I believe it's a him. He thinks he's a her. He wants to change it to say he was born female. And if I read the story correctly, I think they already got their Social Security card changed. Or they've already had a couple documents changed, but they want to change the birth certificate. Well, of course, for number one, this paves the way to a sort of a perverted so-called marriage, because you get a guy, he changes his birth certificate and says, well, I'm a woman, and then he marries a man, and that's like homosexual so-called marriage.
I don't know how well these operations go when they get them.
They're horrifying operations, Deborah. It's just, I can't imagine these poor men going through these grotesque, emasculating operations. And then I have actually witnessed firsthand at one of the conferences I went to a long time ago, a woman who was, these young women who believe they want to be men. I think they evolve from so-called butch dykes, you know, they're the masculine lesbian, and they want to just go, hey, let's just make it official, I want to be a man. So they have their healthy breasts removed, and I went to something called a session called the chest surgery show and tell, in which these 20-something girls were showing off their flat chests after these operations. And it was one of the saddest and the most horrifying things I've ever seen, because they can never, you know, that's a permanent thing. And these are healthy bodies that they're destroying.
Wow. Now, adoption.
The law is saying you cannot factor sexual orientation in child custody cases and increasingly in adoption cases.
They're using the children to play.
They're using the children. They may love the children. It's hard not to love a child. The issue is not whether they love the child. The issue is what's best for the child. And a child does best in with a married mother and father, a permanent commitment, modeling normalcy, the complementary nature of men and women. It is just the height of foolishness to believe that there will be no damage to the child from being modeled male homosexuality or lesbianism in the child's daily routine in life. That's just not healthy.
And as with what's happening in the public schools, they're treating the children as basically second class. They don't come first in the situations where they're supposed to be the ones who are coming first, in the schools,
right,
in the families. I mean, why does a person have a child? It's not supposed to be about the parents.
Yes.
Why does a teacher have a job? It's not supposed to be about the teacher. They're forgetting who it's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about the children.
Yes, great point, Deborah. Children are becoming the props or the tools of the homosexual activist agenda. And you just said it so well. I mean, adoption, it's not about the parents. It's about what's best for the child. And what is amazing, of course, they use the hard cases to get ahead. They use the case of the 12-year-old boy who has AIDS and nobody wants to adopt him. And those are very hard cases. But when the rubber hits the road, what they really want is say you have a child, a baby being adopted, and you've got three normal married heterosexual couples, and you've got one homosexual couple. They want that homosexual couple to have the same opportunity, same exact chance to raise that, to get adopt that child as the heterosexual, the normal couples. And that is just selfish to the core, because a child needs a mom and a dad. A dad brings things. I have children. You have children. The mother and the father each bring separate goods, and that's the way God made it. He made our bodies complementary. He made our personalities and our the way we relate and the way we relate to children. I mean, there's mothers. Can we still say in America in 2009 that women are more nurturing to children than men often are? I mean,
absolutely.
You know, this idea that we can pretend that two men. And you see them, you know, you see them in pictures walking babies they adopted from China down the streets of New York City. The idea that that child is going to have as good a shot at a healthy development and certainly a godly development as raised in a normal married household is just ridiculous.
Well, they're self-centered people to begin with, and I'm sure they're not going to put the children first. That's a fact. They don't put anyone before themselves. And I have to wonder what's going to happen in another 10, 20 years when some of these children grow up and go against the very people who raised them.
Have you ever read Don Stefanowicz's book?
I have it right here, as a matter of fact.
It's beautifully written, and that's exactly what happened in her life, that the father was very selfish in that story. And I'm not saying that every homosexual father or every lesbian mother, is going to be like that. But, you know, you look at male promiscuity, it's just homosexual promiscuity is out of this world compared to anything else. I mean, there is a level of tolerated outside sex. You've got activists like the homosexual activist Dan Savage thinking that non-monogamy is what marriages need to survive. We need to allow a little non-monogamy, you know, a little outside sex. Thanks, Dan. Gee, that's really what I think American marriages need. And so you've got this, just to begin with, you've got this hyper-promiscuity that is tolerated within the homosexual male subculture. You know, it is more promiscuous. And then you're asking them to settle down, raise a child in a healthy environment. I mean, it's just absurd. It really is.
Well, I'm actually hoping that especially some of the adopted children, I hope that they, when they grow up, that they bring some of these people to court and sue them. I really do. I mean,
idea whether that's possible, but I do know that what you're saying is there's a lot of truth to it because, the kids are the victims. It's not about the parent. Dan Savage should not be a parent. You know, in a normal world, Dan Savage, as a homosexual activist, would not be a parent. And that's how it should be. He's already admitted to three-way sexual trysts with his so-called husband and another guy. Even as a father, even as he's this adoptive father, he admits this. I mean, it's kind of freakish. I just think, you know, a lesbian in the old days, a lesbian would not be a parent. And yeah, I understand that women want children, that these lesbians are still women and they still want children. But they chose to embrace this lifestyle, which is not healthy for children. It's not healthy for children to have so-called two moms. Children need a mom and a dad.
I hope that some of these children, when they grow up, go after the states as well. Now, speaking of indecent behavior, I point people to your website, the indecent behavior in the street.
In Nancy Pelosi's district, San Francisco, every year they have, more than one. Actually, they have several events in which open nudity is tolerated. There's a bike race where people ride through the streets nude, believe it or not. Open nudity is now tolerated. But there's something called the Folsom Street Fair, which celebrates sadomasochism, just the wicked, violent, degrading sex. Consensual is what they say. But they actually had sex acts going on, these deviant sex acts going on in the streets, and police stood by and did nothing. And it's astonishing to look and say, this is San Francisco. This is the Speaker of the House, her district, third in line to be President of the United States, and they let people have sex in the streets and walk around totally nude. I was at this event the last two or the last 3 years, Deborah, and there were men walking around with just sneakers and socks on.
And yet
hundreds of fully nude men walking the street, and you see the cops over on the sidelight, you know, near the sidewalks, just kind of, oh, ho-hum, another boring day in San Francisco. And I don't think most Americans have any clue this is going on. And if they did, I believe there would be far less support for this thing we call the gay agenda.
And yet we have people who defend it. Now, I noticed on your site, okay, we've got Hannity and Combs, The Larry King Show, Crossfire. These are just a few of shows that you've debated the homosexual issue on with advocates, which just shocks me because these people have to know what the homosexuals are doing, and yet they still debate on the side of homosexuals. But
well, it's because it comes back to what we said earlier, Deborah. A person now who considers himself or herself tolerant, liberal-minded, non-judgmental, all the cliches, that whole tolerance mindset has taken root in this country. They say, well, how dare I judge homosexuals? They don't call them that. Of course, they say gays. Well, I don't hate gays. You hear that expression. What does that mean? I don't hate people. I oppose behavior. And if you're practicing that behavior, then I oppose it. Just as if Deborah, if you told me, hey, I like to use cocaine, I would say, Deborah, that's wrong, you know, and it's not, it shouldn't, you know, I oppose that. I don't hate you because you do it. I just think you're involved in bad behavior. And so it's this mindset of not wanting to be anti-gay, and it's all caught up in this tolerance. And so you have people who, actually, they don't know. Most of them are pretty much ignorant about what the whole homosexual agenda is about these days. They don't have any idea about the incredible health risks. They're largely they choose to be. I mean, they're not really familiar with some of the things that we know about the movement: the hyperpromiscuity, the incredible number of AIDS cases that are linked to homosexual male behavior. You know, they paper over all these things, and they just say, look, I'm tolerant, and that's what's happened.
When you're debating someone who's pro-homosexuality, like on any of these shows that I just mentioned, do they seem to know all of what homosexuality is about?
Well, you know, it depends. I mean, I think most gay activists understand a lot about the lifestyle. They don't dare admit the true nature of the promiscuity of, for example, of gay men. I remember Wayne Beeson, I mentioned earlier, who's, you know, out to prove that there's no such thing as an ex-gay. He's just an incredible zealot. But Wayne, we mentioned, he was debating, I think he was debating Matt Barber, my friend, over at Liberty Council, and the subject of the that Folsom Street Fair in San Francisco, where there's the anti-Christian behavior, the men walking around nude, there's actual deviant sex acts that occur in the street. And Wayne described it in terms of it being like a dress-up party. In other words, rather than being this perverse affair where men are walking around totally nude, because Wayne has to lie about that event because he can't pop the finely crafted veneer that the gay lobby has pushed about this issue. There's all sorts of, you know, they put the conservative face forward on TV, but they know what's really going on.
But I'm curious, people like Alan Combs, Larry King, the host on Crossfire, are they involved?
Well, I mean, Alan Combs, I remember doing the show with Alan Combs, and he just he sort of took a cheap shot. We did it on that San Francisco event. But Alan Combs is just another liberal who's going to talk up the victimization of gay men and lesbians. That's the liberal line these days. Homosexuals are victims. They are not aggressive. They are not a threat to anybody. And Alan is just in that ilk, and I think that's how most liberals are going to be these days. And even some conservatives, it's shocking to see some people who call themselves conservatives who come out for civil unions or so-called gay marriage, because we're hitting a zeitgeist here, and the zeitgeist is it's all about tolerance, and the one thing you can't do in America is judge, except if you're judging the Christians. It's okay to judge the Christians because they're a bunch of whack jobs, and they're intolerant, and they have this superstition of believing the Bible is actually true. So
when did it become illegal to judge, and when did it become illegal to hate? I mean, not that we, you know, hate all these people, but even if someone does want to hate somebody, when did that become illegal?
Yeah, I mean, you hate behavior. I hate the behavior. I don't hate the people.
Right.
I do hate the behavior. And just like I hate divorce, and I hate, I hate adultery, and I hate drug abuse. You know, I mean, again, you hit the nail on the head. It's all about, we're not in a real debate here. The words have all been changed, and we're not, nobody can judge anymore, but we, in the real world, we all judge things all the time. You know, I'm
Absolutely.
Going to be very judgmental when my daughter brings home her first boyfriend, or, you know, when I want to know about that person. I want to have discriminating tastes. I want to make sure that my children are safe, et cetera. And so we all make judgments all the time. So this idea that you can't judge homosexual behavior, which, by the way, is disproportionately linked to awful sexual diseases such as HIV/AIDS. I mean, we can't judge that behavior. We have to pretend that it's not linked to disease. It's just preposterous.
Even though there's sites by the government that links it right to it back in the early 1980s, but they want to keep it all shush, and it's like, well, you know, there's an elephant in the room, folks.
Yes, the elephant in the room, and it's homosexual behavior, and sometimes it gets ridiculous. I was watching O'Reilly, and they were talking about that case in Seattle where the lesbian couple was making out in front of the guy and his son at the baseball game, and they were ejected, I believe, from the stadium. And O'Reilly was trying to make it sound like, and he had, I think it was, I can't remember her name, one of the legal analysts, and they were talking about it, and O'Reilly was making it, well, it's just a public display of affection. That's the main issue. Well, not really, because, you know, I have young sons. I would not mind if you were there with your husband, or there was a male-female couple, and they gave each other a kiss. I wouldn't want them making out in front of my kids, but a little display of affection between man and wife is a normal thing in our culture. Are we going to pretend now that two guys kissing is normal? So what O'Reilly did not want to admit was that it's the homosexuality. That's why. That's the elephant in the room in that situation. That's what makes it different. If it was just a guy and a woman holding hands, I want my son to see that. I do not want my son and my daughters to think that it's okay for women to kiss, I mean, erotically, obviously, and that's the difference. So nobody wants to talk about the elephant in the room, so you hit on another good one there, Deborah.
And if they have a right, which they shouldn't, but if they have a right to have public displays of, quote, affection, then we have a right to say to children, that's not right and that's not normal, right in front of them. We have a right to say, that's what God says is an abomination unto him.
Yes.
And we have a right to say it right in front of them, right there. If our children are seeing something that's wrong, we have a right to tell our children right there.
Now imagine that the hate crimes laws the hate crime bills become laws, and they are, and a whole hate crimes mentality creeps across this country. You could do that in front of two activists who are, by the way, intentionally trying to stir up trouble, because there's already the precedent of so-called gay kiss-ins where they harass people by kissing. Think about that whole concept, Deborah.
Exactly.
It's what you said earlier. How strange. Boy, their punishment is to inflict homosexuality on people. So you're in this situation where now you've got these people kissing to aggravate you. Maybe they know you're even an activist, and you say that's wrong, and you tell your child, "That's God says that's wrong." There might come a time where they could say, "Oh my gosh, I feel intimidated by what Deborah Smith is saying. I'm going to call the police." And they can say they felt physically threatened, or, you know, the victim of intimidation. And this is the problem. We already have seen, everybody knows about these fake fake hate crimes. There's been probably a dozen at least fake gay hate crimes. You know, these people who stage false hate crimes. I mean, they're already in the business of manipulating the hate. You know, there's a hate industry out there which is pushing the idea that we are haters just because we oppose homosexuality. And so these hate crime laws are going to be used to harass Christians who speak out against homosexuality. That's just that is what I really believe.
That's what they're designed to do. And they're already doing it in different places, like, for instance, places of work. Now they're having these sensitivity programs where they're forcing in some businesses, which I'm sure you're aware of, is for the employees to go and get sensitive
right.
to homosexuals so that they don't say things that offend homosexuals in the workplace. So even though the laws are not enforcing this at this time, places of employment are.
Yes, the idea that that somebody like you, Deborah, with strong beliefs, should be subjected to a pro-gay lecture, a condescending lecture, which is going to seek to undermine your suppositions, your faith-based, your moral beliefs, your whole understanding of an issue as important as sexual morality, is un-American. You know, it's again, it comes back to what they believe. They believe me and you, through this conversation, are analogous to evil racists like the KKK. That's what they believe. They believe we need to be re-educated because we hold the wrong beliefs. In fact, an interesting part of the way gay activists operate is I started calling them homo fundamentalists because they have their own fundamentals, and you can't question them. You can't question that it's okay to be gay. That's just who somebody is. That's one of their fundamentals. It's what they believe, and they cannot be shaken from that belief. So if they call us fundamentalists, which I don't call myself, it's a pejorative, I think, usually used as a pejorative against Christians, they certainly are fundamentalists in that they hold the certain beliefs about their gayness and homosexuality and how it's not sinful, etc.
I was reading something about an activist in Georgia who decided to compare you to Nazis.
We're encouraging the new GOP RNC chair, Michael Steele, to not cozy up to the log cabin Republicans as a way to grow the Republican Party, because the log cabin Republicans, which is a homosexual activist group, is extremely bigoted against pro-family values and Christians. They are fighting to overturn Prop 8 in California. This is not the way to grow the Republican Party. And so we launched a campaign to get people to call and write Michael Steele and, you know, do not support the log cabin agenda. Well, lo and behold, the president of the Georgia log cabin Republicans, a guy named Jamie Ensley, he said that he wrote Michael Steele, and he CC'd me, and he said, don't listen to this Americans for Truth. They're like the German Nazi Party, and they're a terrorist. They're a domestic terrorist organization.
I think that's a pretty serious accusation to call your organization domestic terrorist.
He's a Republican, and he's active in the Republican Party there. And we're hoping that you know, other Republican leaders in that state denounce this ridiculous, bigoted, anti-Christian conduct.
With the Republican Party?
Yes, because the log cabin Republicans, you know, they're really kind of like, their goal is to work within the Republican Party to make it pro-homosexual or at least neutral on the homosexual issue. It's the nose under the tent, and with the goal of emasculating the Republican Party so that it no longer stands strong for family values. That's what their goal is. The Republicans cannot say, hey, we're the pro-family party. We want to defend marriage and be pro-life and everything. They can't do that and yet support and encourage homosexuality, which is what the log cabin Republicans is all about.
So they basically get into everything and try to just basically dirty it up.
The homosexual movement has been very skilled at penetrating organizations to change them. They've done that to a number of professional organizations. They get their caucuses. the Gay and Lesbian Caucus. They've done it to businesses, and they've turned whole companies into gay cheerleaders. I mean, the idea that Pepsi has given $1 million to homosexual activist groups is quite astonishing if you think about it. So they get into organizations with their dedication and they've got a skill of undermining large organizations through their organizing work. And yes, I believe that's exactly what the log cabins are trying to do to the Republican Party. They have only 20,000 members across the country, 20,000 members. Yet the Republican Party is kowtowing to this group as if this is some kind of important constituency in the GOP, when you've got millions and millions of conservative and faith-based grassroots Republicans who believe homosexuality is wrong. They're going to treat those equally under the big tent.
You know, this vision is in my mind right now. I don't remember what movie it was, what show, but there was like this black smoke cloud and it was the cloud of death just traveling on the ground, going throughout the places and going into everywhere and everything. That's what's come into my mind, because that's what the homosexual movement is. It's like a black cloud of death that just is weaving its way into everything. And we know that history tells us every culture that ever fell right after the homosexuals went rampant.
Sexual immorality is definitely a factor in the downfall of civilizations, and we are very advanced. And of course, it's not just the homosexuals. It's you look at our culture now. There is such rampant disregard of what you could say God's idea of sexuality. I mean, you watch some of these shows like Two and a Half Men. Somebody was telling me the plot of this show, which, you know, was glorifying prostitution and just all sorts of promiscuity. And America is in a dangerous place. And I believe homosexuality, the embrace of it, is a marker of societies, because homosexual behavior is a deeply sinful behavior. And to pretend that it's normal and good, and it's even okay to teach it to kids, hey, you know what, hey, little Johnny might grow up to be gay, and that's just as okay as if he grew up to be a father with a wife and children. I mean, when you get to that point where you have such lies being promoted, even to children, you're in a dangerous spot, and I think that's where we are, and America has a choice. Are we going to teach homosexuality to children? Are we going to pretend that so-called gay marriage is just like the real deal? We're right at the point now where we have to make the decision as a society, and if we go the wrong way, I believe our society will face judgment just like all societies have, and we will reap the consequences of trying to glorify and celebrate this sin, even in the law.
The work you're doing, getting the truth out there to people about just what homosexuality is, just what it's doing, and exactly how it's bringing down this great nation, if we can get that truth out to people, then maybe we can stop this.
Well, I do think that we are in a perilous time, and the problem is that the media has become an arm of the homosexual movement, and so the media makes it very difficult to get truth out. I was watching Anderson Cooper the other day, and there was a show on Ted Haggard, and of course Ted Haggard is the latest tool to be used. They're using him to mock Christians and everything. And there was a documentary by Nancy Pelosi's daughter about Ted Haggard, and I'm told it's just awful and tragic to watch. It's pathetic what's happened to him. But having said that, I hope he can come out of it and come out of homosexuality and leave that behind. But anyways, right after the episode, Anderson Cooper gets on there, and he just starts ridiculing the idea, in the guise of being a newsman, the idea that you can change as a homosexual, that homosexuals can change. And he got some expert and is talking about, oh, if you try to change, it's going to harm, you know, people get harmed. And the whole thing was just bashing the idea of healthy change for homosexuals, that they can leave homosexuality behind. And it wasn't journalism. I mean, Anderson Cooper at that instance was just, he was a pro-gay activist. That's what he was. And that's what he was doing. And maybe that's what he felt his duty was to do. But it wasn't journalism, and he wasn't doing anything at all to contribute to a greater understanding of homosexuality or the truth on this issue. So we fight a battle against the media, which has now become the politically correct battering ram for the gay activist movement.
And they're very hard on anyone who comes out and says they've left the homosexual
quote. They're either hard on them or they just ignore them. The easier way is just ignore them. Ignore the idea of healthy ex-homosexuals because that's too inconvenient. That interferes with our PC conception of what homosexuality is. I mean, the whole expression, it's who you are. Think about that. Homosexual, being gay, that's the term, of course, which is a whole other story how ingenious that term is because it makes it sound so innocuous. Being gay is who you are. Coming out of the closet as if you're leaving darkness behind and you're stepping into the truth, when in reality we know it's the opposite. Homosexuality is not who a person is. It's what a person is doing. And certainly that person doesn't have to do that. And we know that from the many, many men and women who've left it behind that nobody has to be gay. It's not a rigid identity. It's not something you're born with or that you are naturally almost predetermined to be. It's a behavioral choice to embrace this lifestyle. Even if some people are more prone to it because of circumstances in their life or whatever, we all are prone to sin. That's what we believe as Christians. And the difference between this movement and all other movements is they define themselves by the sin. It would be as if every man who struggles with lust were to call himself a luster and go and attend once a year, go to a fornication pride parade or a luster's pride parade. That's the analogy that's appropriate for embracing and celebrating homosexual behavior.
If they've decided to embrace their sin, they've decided to take their sin and embrace it and decide to go with that. And it is true that the media, they have deemed themselves to be the moral leaders. And when really they're just supposed to be reporting the news, I thought, when it came to mainstream news. Now, of course, if someone, you know, deems themselves to be conservative or liberal, but if they're going to claim to be just reporting the news and not let their own views get into it, then that's what they should do, but that's not what they're doing.
The other thing is the idea of the media as moral leaders is, boy, I haven't heard anything so shocking in weeks, Deborah.
But that's what they think they are.
Yeah,
they've deemed themselves.
They believe they're morally superior.
They're not being honest that they are liberals. They're not
honest. They believe that they are more, their idea, for example, of sexuality is more progressive and moral than ours. And all those ignorant Christians out there, boy, you know, what a bunch of homophobes they are. And you're right, that's really the mentality. And
they do this while they claim to be unbiased.
Yes, they always. And I think there are some honest journalists who would still admit that there is another side to this issue. And we have to hope that those kind of journalists with a little bit more character will prevail in this struggle, because the media's reputation is just going into the sewer. After this last election, you know, the book by Goldberg, it really was a slobbering love affair, but we could write the media's slobbering love affair with homosexuality, and that's even more of a slobbering love affair.
And so, you know what? Well, that's a good note to leave this on, because I want people to keep that in mind. They cannot go off of what the biased media, who is not admitting to being biased, they can't go off of that. They have to go and listen to people who are at least honest about what side they're on. If they want to listen to a liberal, then go listen to someone who's honest about being biased. But if they want the truth from a conservative view, they have to go to a conservative to get it. And your website, the work you're doing, is giving the truth. And the name of it is absolutely perfect: Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, AFTA, and can be found at americansfortruth.com, correct? correct?
Yes, AmericansForTruth.com and AFTA, AFTAH.org. And we have a free newsletter, and you can write us at AmericansForTruth@comcast.net. And we certainly hope that a lot of your listeners will come by and give us a visit.
Well, I hope so, too. And I thank you not only for the interview, I thank you for the work you do.
Thank you. And Deborah, could I just say one more thing, too, which is that I really hope that we, of course, there will be gay activists who listen to your interview. And, you know, I just want them to know that there is forgiveness. And many, many people have once been proudly gay and have turned to Jesus Christ and have left that lifestyle. And their lives have been changed, and their whole outlook on life and what's right and wrong has been changed. And so just because you believe you're gay or you think you were born this way, you know, give the Bible a try. Start reading the Bible, and there's so much truth there. And know that there are many, many great Christian organizations that are helping people leave that lifestyle. And we don't hate anybody. If we really hated people, we would want them to remain in homosexuality, which we believe will be judged by God. We don't want people to be judged. We want people to seek the forgiveness that's available and to be forgiven and to step out of that lifestyle into the truth.
Absolutely. That's what we'd like. And I would like to add to that scripture does say that what they do is worthy of death. It's in the New Testament, Romans chapter 1, and of course in the Old Testament we know what it says there as well. Jesus took that punishment on the cross. He paid for those sins, and to all those who come into a saving faith in Jesus Christ, that price is paid for, and they don't have to suffer that death.
Yes, and we've all, everybody who claims the name of Christ has experienced that forgiveness, and we certainly want to extend that to anybody listening.
Amen. Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you, Deborah. That was very, very kind of you to have me on.
Thank you for being here. And again, for the listeners, Peter's website is www.americansfortruth.com and AFTA, AFTAH.org. I'm Deborah J. M. Smith of informingchristians.com, also known as DeborahJMSmith.com. Thank you for listening. Special thanks to TalkShoe.com for providing a top-rate, non-biased audio platform.